Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
The elders like to fall in the mud and get kicked in the head by an iron boot. Of course you don't. No one does. That never happens. Sorry, Ted. It's a dumb question. Skip that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Shit for March 18th, 2019. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm your co-host, Frank Natel. And, you know, when you say that, the title of our show, I wonder if it will be titled something different in the near future. What do you think?
Yeah, you and I have been throwing this idea around back and forth a little bit. And you know, I hate to change the title of things, right, because people associate titles with something. But the pod is evolving. And it's not really what that this title seems to represent anymore, right? I mean, we have like we seem to hit a hot topic, but the rest of the pod seems to just kind of go into, you know, just a couple of guys talking, and which is good, which is, you know, ultimately what we wanted anyhow. But the title that we have now really doesn't seem to reflect that as much. And I don't know, Frank, I think it's time for a change.
Well, stay tuned, everybody. Stay tuned. We'll see.
Yeah, I think in the next in the next couple of weeks we're gonna see a change to the title.
But today's show, we have some pressing topics to talk about.
We do. Not being folks who really want to spend a whole lot of time on the COVID-19 virus, because let's just face it, Frank, everybody's talking about that. And I don't know about you, but I'm tired of it. I mean, it sounds mean, like I'm saying it like it's just a passing thing, but you can only listen to and only hear about one thing for so long, right? Before you start to, you just want to pull your hair out, you know?
And you get weary and then it becomes a numbness to it. I think, you know, any talk about something related to it, to me, you know, as we sit here as friends and just chat about things and we share our conversation with the world generally and anybody that wants to listen to us, maybe as we go through this, how does it affect things in our everyday world, and how can we maybe find things that are more creative and more more productive, you know, as a result of being affected by this? And you and I are affected by it in different ways. So, you know, I think we can come at it from different ways when we talk about just new topics and new things to do. Because I'm home, you know, I'm home every day at this point. My son's home every day from school. My wife's home. She's not, you know, working. She was there 2 days this week to get lesson plans home to people. So there's things to do at home that we've been, you know, just naturally falling into a groove. And I think that's maybe something neat to talk about. Not so much the reason why we're home, but what we're going to do while we're home so that we can, you know, stay productive, stay healthy, stay happy, you know, keep things moving in the right direction.
I think so. Last night there were supposed to be 4 primaries. There ended up being 3, and we'll touch on Ohio, who decided to postpone at the last minute here a little bit later. But we had primaries in Arizona, Florida, and Illinois. Not necessarily in that order, but Biden swept them. He swept all 3, right?
Yep.
He's now broken the halfway point. I want to say he's at like 1,100 and something. I can't remember what it is right offhand. But about 340 more than Bernie Sanders did. And all of this, even with the COVID-19 virus and the basically self-imposed quarantines that some people are under, the general quarantines that most communities are under, you still had a record turnout for a primary in at least 2 of those. I want to say they were for all 3, but I can't I didn't get a chance to confirm the Arizona one. The Arizona one. Biden now has a commanding lead, and before we get into what we think should happen next, what did you take from that?
Well, I mean, I think it's a signal of, I guess, first of all, seeing that the people, the voter turnout. I have mixed feelings about that. I mean, I think it's important to, it's probably one of the most important things going on in the world right now, in our world, in our country, is exercising the right to vote. And unfortunately, at this moment, we don't have a real great way of doing that without showing up physically at a ballot box, a ballot booth or whatever you want to call it, and doing it. So because of that, I think it's real important that people do still exercise their right to vote. And I think maybe people need to do it in a way that's sensible, you know, as they're waiting in line, stay a few feet away from each other, maybe wear masks. I know people say don't wear masks, but wash your hands, carry your hand sanitizer with you, put it on before you enter the booth, put it on after you exit the booth, you know, just take those kind of precautions. I think that, you know, it's important. So my takeaway is I'm glad to see it in that respect. I hope it doesn't impact the spread of the virus, because we had that happen in those states yesterday, and there was a large turnout. As far as the result, I think it's indicative of where people are right now. The Democratic voters are solidly lining up behind who they think has the best shot of not only winning this primary, but the best shot of winning the presidency, because that's the goal for the Democrats, is obviously let's put our best candidate up there. So you see people kind of coming to that conclusion collectively. And I think that's what this is all about. I don't think personally, this is just my personal hot take on this, I guess. I don't think personally people really care so much about the platform. We've talked about this in the past, as much as they care about that gut level emotional connection. And in this case, maybe the emotional connection to somebody who they think can actually beat Trump. And that's really what it comes down to. And that's where I see the direction of this thing going.
Yeah, I'm pretty much of two minds about Joe Biden's wins. It was nice to see that it wasn't close to, and I don't mean that because I'm trying to be anti-Bernie. It's nice to see, because you normally don't have the Democratic Party who is very all pointing in the same direction. You know, they tend to go in a whole bunch of different directions. That's why it's so hard for the Democrats to message a lot. But it was very, very obvious who their choice has been. Really over the last two elections, right? The Super Tuesday 2 and then again last night. Joe's not just winning states, he's winning in landslides. He's winning huge. Tuesday of elections, not this one, not yesterday, but the one before that, a lot of the talk was because the young kids, the young voters aren't coming out to vote. I didn't hear any of that today or last night. I just heard it was a landslide. And, you know, the Florida results was a landslide. That was ridiculous watching that, you know. And then, you know, you're seeing the Illinois one that came, and it was pretty close to call for there for a little while, but after I want to say by 9:30 or so, Joe just ran away with it. And then, you know, you had that again in Arizona. It was just awful for Bernie. So you're seeing the Democratic Party pretty much deciding who their guy is, who their nominee is. And two questions that keep popping up is, are they backing Joe because they think that they're looking for a victory, and they think that they overwhelmingly think that Joe's the guy that could actually beat Trump? Or are they backing Joe because if you listen to even the last couple of speeches that Joe gave, and how he's talking about unity and we can do it, sounds very reminiscent of Obama. If people are tired of hearing the idiot in the White House calling people names, and the sexist and racist things that he does and things like that, if Joe's message is just what they want, or if it's a combination of both. I haven't quite wrapped my head around that yet.
I really do think it's a combination of both, because I think you can't tease those things out. I think you see some of the fact that people look at Joe as a calming force. They see him as somebody who can unite people. They see some of him as that. People see him as the anti-Trump, as somebody who, you know, is able to walk into a situation and kind of command respect, and maybe also have the confidence to turn to experts and to turn to people as other smart people in the room and say, I'm going to count on this expert, this smart person to be my lead on this. And I don't need to take the credit for that. And then I think it is because of that, that they feel confident that he can beat Trump. And then they also feel confident that it's not Bernie, you know, they're less confident that Bernie could be that person, because, you know, Bernie is kind of like the Democrat Party side of Trump. He's going to rail and yell and scream, and be a fighter, quote unquote. But he doesn't necessarily have that touch to unite people. At least that's the emotional thing that I see out of it.
Yeah, I do too. People don't seem to not get, you know, the warm and fuzzies for Bernie. They may like his policies. They may like what he has to say. But I don't know too many people that actually sit there and say they like him. They like what he's proposing and what his platform is. But I don't see too many people who actually like him.
And I think that leads us to another point in what we want to talk about at some point today. And that is, you know, when should he drop out? And it leads us to a bigger question and a bigger discussion about that. Because to me, I think if you were a politician, just purely looking at a race and the signals, the road signs that are there, and, you know, where this thing's going to go. I think you have to read the road signs now if you're Bernie and say, it's time to pull the plug on this. Not going to waste any more gas, not going to waste anybody's time or money, my own efforts. And I'm going to look at a way to make a better impact on this race and on the race for the White House in a different way. You know, I think on our pod last week, I said I might wait until May. And I think you said you might wait until April. You know, I think those were the two kind of months, general months that we talked about. You know, and look, in a week's time, the landscape to me has changed enough to say that I've changed my opinion. If I were in Bernie's shoes, I would say, like, now, maybe early April at the worst, at the absolute worst, is the time. You know, only it's about messaging to me. It's about, how do I craft the best message if I'm Bernie? How do I craft the best strategy? And then there's a bigger discussion I want to have, but that's kind of just that timeline and just talking about how, to me personally, the timeline has advanced a great deal since we last spoke.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that timeline, that was affected by two things. First of all, being just the overwhelming support and votes that Joe is getting, number one, where it's not really close, right? Bernie's just getting kicked to the curb every state that he's in. And number two is, you know, we do have this COVID-19 that's around, and it's not going away anytime soon. And by Bernie staying in the race, which he's going to do, Frank, I'm telling you, he's going to do it. He already proved he did. He already proved he's going to push this thing all the way to the end. He's forcing people who, again, like we stated earlier, record numbers are going. He's forcing people to go vote. He's forcing people to not practice good social distancing. He's forcing people into confined areas for sometimes 2, 3, 4 hours at a crack, simply because he's not giving up on something that at this point is damn near impossible for him to win. But he's forcing people to do it. I mean, I get the passion. I understand the desire to win. I get all that. But at some point, you got to look at the greater good.
This, yeah, also, and I think I think he'll do that at this point. I don't think before last night that the road signs were completely as one-sided as they are right now. I think they were definitely like, hey, it's looking pretty bleak for me. Can I turn it around? Is there any chance we could turn this around? And let's see what happens. There's no more chance. Like, it's done. I mean, so now I'm not as convinced as you are that because past performance predicts future results with him. I think that we're in new territory, both politically and health-wise. And I'm hoping that somebody close to him and even his own better judgment will set in the very near future, and that he'll surprise you. I'm hoping that he'll surprise you and he'll say, because of just what you said, you know, we have to protect our people. We have to look at this in a different way. That he'll find a way to message it and he'll bow out.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm hoping I'm wrong too. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I want to be wrong. I want him to get on TV, you know, Monday and say, you know what? We can't do this to people. We can't put people in jeopardy. We can't put people's health and possibly lives in jeopardy for this. It's not worth it. And he can even say, you know, if it was closer, I'd stay in it. If I had a reasonable shot, I'd stay in it. You know, but this gives him the ultimate way to get out and not get all the Bernie bros. Fuck it, I'm not going to vote. Right? He can spin it as he's saying, look, I'm doing this for you because I want you to stay safe.
And you know? I think that leads me to my next kind of bigger, broader topic and bigger discussion that I'd like to have with you, and that is because I think we both want to see better days ahead for our country, regardless of. Forget about the fact that everybody in the world is facing a crisis right now that's unbelievable in scope. I mean, we knew, and look, if people that listen to this thing don't believe us, we could take screenshots with dates on them of discussions that we've had collectively. And you and I have been a big part of guiding those discussions or participating in those discussions with folks about how we said, I'm going to say back in December, Patsy, that this economy was built on a house of cards, that the United States economy was built on a house of cards.
Yeah, you did.
And how we said that by February or March, you're going to see a big retreat in the stock market. We thought, you know, that it would happen, that it would take a little bit of time, but that it was going to happen. And what triggered it, of course, is this pandemic. But if you had solid numbers, if you had solid room to kind of retreat without falling apart, if you had those measures in place that you could put things in place to say, let's slow this whole thing down economically. Let's take a step, a pause, and say, we haven't cut the interest rates so low. We haven't flooded the market with this cheap money. We haven't overinflated prices. You know, and you and I on the pod have talked about the fact that, I mean, you brought up the great point about how things were so overinflated at the grocery store. And then we used examples, you know, we used examples of that. So the fact of the matter is, and we've been very, I wouldn't say prescient, but we've looked at what's going on in the world around us instead of drinking the Kool-Aid. And we've said, there's danger signs ahead. Okay. So I think you and I both believe that we need a different kind of leadership and a different way forward. And that's what concerns me about, you know, whether it's Trump or Biden, neither of them in and of themselves represent different leadership. Trump is a failed, absolutely failed leader. He's a failed leader in every sense of the word. I mean, however you want to slice it. Biden, he's been a positive leader in his role as vice president, in his role as senator at times, but he's structured his leadership under this idea of corporate Wall Street banks, you know, big business. He's always been in that world. Okay. And it's going to serve him in being able to get elected, and that's fine. But we really need a voice that says, how are we going to protect American workers? How are we going to really boost American workers? How are we going to boost them to the point where they need to be and not just benefit the top, you know, 0.01% of people in this world? How are we going to, you know, provide healthcare for people in this country that reaches down to every economic level? How are we going to provide education that really, you know, brings people up to the opportunity of having a promising opportunity to learn you know, at the level that they need to learn at. And from elementary school or kindergarten all the way up through college, and it's accessible to everybody. And I don't mean accessible just through, you know, funds are part of it, but accessible in communities, accessible through transportation, accessible, you know, in every way. There's no barriers to reaching that education. And people don't believe that there are. You need to spend some time in some places. I'm telling you right now, if you send your kids to a school in Baltimore and it's 40 degrees and, you know, 40 degrees in the classroom in January, that's not accessible learning. It's just not. So we need somebody that's going to be a champion for those changes. And that's what leads me to this idea that if Bernie's not in the race, who's that voice, or how does that voice get pushed upon Joe? How does Joe realize that, yes, we feel emotionally connected enough to you that we know that you can beat Trump, but really your policies kind of suck. You know, your policies need to look at kind of like backing away from the corporate people, but not in a way that's going to hurt your chances, but you need to have a big enough, you have to have a platform that's going to allow for the workers to get their piece and for everybody that's in this country that's been left behind. See, it was the promise that Trump made 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, whatever, to these workers and to the everyday person that was so appealing. And it still has to be delivered upon. Trump will never deliver upon it. Biden might, but he has to have room on his platform for somebody like Joe's ideas to get there. I mean, I'm sorry, like Bernie's ideas to get there.
Yeah, and you made a lot of good points, but in a way, I think you're kind of putting the cart before the horse first. Before any of this could happen, you got to win.
Yeah.
None of it matters. You know, right. I've asked the question, you know, in a couple of the same groups that you and I are in, where I hear I read this really long idealistic rant about something. And I sit there and I say, well, I agree with that. I agree with that. I agree with that. I agree. And, you know, you do. And I always make the argument, assuming no one on the planet thinks that universal health care is a bad idea, that everybody's covered all the time, no matter what it is. No one will sit there and say that's a poor idea. You know, free college. No one will sit there and say that's a bad idea, considering the first 12 years are free anyhow. Right? It's, you know, how you're going to do it. That's the trick. But just the idea, just the notion of it, no one in the world's ever going to disagree with. But I always go back to the same question. What do you want? Do you want to be right? Or do you want to win? Because you're not going to get both. Okay? You're not going to be able to sit there 5 years from now, 6 years from now, 2 years from now, and say, see, told you we should have did this, or told you we should have done that, or told you we should have, whenever you're sitting on the sidelines because Trump's in for another 4 years. So it's tough. I agree with the notions. But at some point, you either, number one, have to realize that what you want in the next 6 months or 8 months or even 4 years isn't feasible, just isn't going to happen. Or number two, you have to be willing to look at what you want and then take what you want and step back and say, but what are you willing to accept? Because you can't at this point try to put any Democrat, whether it's the person running for president or the down ballot tickets, you can't force them to go through a purity test. Because if you're going to do that, Democrats are going to lose. You might as well just pack it in right now and all this exercise we're going to shit. Put a Democrat in there that's at least open to progressive ideas, and then you force them and you pressure them to actually go that way. But they got to be in that position first. And if they're not, forget it. It's all over. Congratulations, you're right. Everybody should have universal health care, as grandma and grandpa are lying on their deathbeds because no one could afford the medicine to keep them alive. You're right. God bless you. I hope you enjoy being right. That's pretty much what it's coming down to. And what I fear is that the Dems, as this thing gets closer, as it's becoming more and more and more apparent who the nominees are going to be. And let's face it, it's going to be Joe this time. But we even heard today, well, he better have a progressive vice president pick. He better do this. He better no fucker. He needs he better have somebody that's going to help him win. That's what he needs, because you could have the most progressive person in the on the planet. He could have Sanders as his vice president and get killed. And what difference did it make? What difference did it make? So we got to be really careful how we're doing this. Who he picks, he already committed to a female. Good for him. It's about fucking time. Now, which one? You know, who's it going to be? Is it going to be Warren? Maybe. I mean, there's a reason she's holding back her endorsement. I don't know. I mean, apparently he doesn't need it right now, but she's holding it back for a reason. She's playing her cards close to the vest, and I don't blame her. I would be too. But you got lots and lots and lots of females who are, they vary from being very middle of the road to somewhat conservative to extremely progressive, that are all qualified to be president, let alone vice president. So, you know, the idea that people are going to start putting stigmas on, you know, well, he better pick this person or he better pick that kind of person. No. He better pick somebody that's going to get him over the finish line.
So, and my thought on that is, you know, I think there are a couple of choices out there that would certainly augment his chances. Joe's an East Coaster. Joe's, you know, an old white dude. He needs to have, and he's committed to a woman, so that's good. So he's brought possibly the woman vote closer to supporting him. It's already supporting him, but, you know, could support him even more with a woman on the ticket. I personally like to see Kamala Harris for a couple reasons, because she's West Coast, and that would give you a boost, you know, in that region. I think California is a lock for, you know, whoever runs on the Democratic ticket. But, you know, you also have a woman of color. It's only one state. You have a woman of color. You probably get Nevada because, you know, you've got a lot of the Las Vegas. You got a lot of people that transplanted from LA to Las Vegas. You got a lot of people that transplanted from California to Nevada. They still probably have enough of a block there that they can. And Nevada's been in play. Nevada's been in play for the mm-hmm. both sides. You know, Colorado is another one that I think you starts to come more in play for the Democrats. It's pretty much up in the air. But, you know, there's probably a couple other people. There could be, you know, there could be a Southern vote that's at play. I don't know if there's anybody, a woman out of Texas. I know there's a woman out of Georgia that people have talked about. Stacey Abrams would be an interesting pick. But the other reason I like Kamala is Gavin Newsom's the governor in California, and he'll replace her in the Senate with a Democrat. Whereas, you know, we may have a problem in other states if a woman is picked from, for example, you know, Warren, if Warren is picked, we might have a problem mm-hmm. there in terms of losing a Senate seat. So, but I do want to address just one quick thing before I move on from the thought. You know, I agree with you, Patsy. We have to win. We have to win. It's imperative we win, and that's rule number one. There is, you know, it's like Vince Lombardi said. It's not winning isn't the most important thing. It's the only thing. It's the only thing we have right now. And it's, to me, absolutely 100%. But we can talk about things. We can discuss things. We still have the ability to discuss things and make things known to our leaders, to our prospective leaders, and what is important to us and why it's important to us as a party, because we still have a party. We still have a Democrat Party that's not been splintered into a Green Party and a Labor Party and whatever else. So in order to make that work as best as it can right now, those discussions do need to take place. The other thing is, look at Trump. I mean, he broke all conventions and norms. He won over people who were Democrats. He won over people who were Rust Belt, blue collar Democrats with his rhetoric, because it appealed to them. He won on the Republican ticket as a slick New York businessman who was a failed in his personal life, failed in his business life, but he gave people the bullshit that they wanted to hear. He told them the bullshit they wanted to hear. He didn't deliver on it. Right. But my point about that is this. We can sit back and say, you can't do this, you can't do that. Everybody said that under the sun when Trump was running for election, was running for president. He'll never win. He can't win. He'll never win. He won't even get the Republican nomination. There's 12 people on there. They're going to split it up so much. There'll be a brokered convention. They talked about that back when he was running. They talked about how he's a con man. He'll lose before the election. He won't even win enough primaries to stay in it. Then they were like, okay, well, he's still in it, but he'll never win the general election. Hillary will beat him. On the night of the election, Hillary exit polls was up 5 to 8% on every exit poll. Okay. He won. He won breaking the norms. We are in the position that we're in right now because ever since 1980, every Democrat that we've ever put up there has moved further and further to the right. And it's left this gap with the American workers. It's left this gap with the blue collar people, with the people in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, where they're dissatisfied with the Democrat Party. So I'm not so sure that we can't look at it from a standpoint of what is the message that we should be delivering. And if the message is we're actually here for the actual people, not the banks, that, you know, people got so upset after 2008 and 2009, when we bailed out every bank and every auto industry, every automaker, and the people were left behind. And here we are again. And $1.5 trillion is going in to prop up the big businesses. What about people out in the streets? You know?
Yeah. And great points. A lot of that though has to do with Democratic messaging, right? Because if the bailout didn't happen, everything that happened at Lordstown last year would have happened in 2008.
Right.
Okay. It's just that simple. Republicans were able to take the message, ran with it, made the Democrats look like a what the Republicans would do, and the Republicans were telling all those guys who were working the lines at Lordstown that, hey, we're here for you. And these fuckers bought it.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Hook, line, and sinker. Right? But what did this jackass run on, right? What you're hearing about this pie in the sky, very, 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 very progressive things, people sitting at their dinner table aren't not talking about that. They're not talking about these things. They're talking about what are we going to do whenever the bills come due next month.
Right.
You know, and that's where Trump and the Republicans got him. That and the fact that Hillary was a horrible candidate. But still, you know, you still have that same issue.
Tangent number one, real quick. If Biden, I mean, let's go back in the timeline in our universe and say Biden doesn't experience the horrific loss that he experienced with his son dying. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he comes out of 2015 feeling much better, psychologically healthier. And America looks at him and says, here's our vice president under Obama versus Hillary, who could be the first woman president. Do we ever have a Trump?
No. No, Biden gets it. And I'll tell you why. I really believe this country is more sexist than it is racist.
100%.
And if Biden was capable of running after his two terms with Obama, I think he wins. Don't forget, Hillary still got 6 million more votes than the asshole did, right? Than Trump right. did. They were just meaningless votes. You know? Because where she got them, the states were already maxed out.
Right.
You know, so I don't want to say meaningless, like their vote doesn't mean anything, but mathematically they were meaningless.
Right.
That's the core of the piece of shit electoral college that we have, and that we're still those rules we're still going to have to play by come November.
I agree with you too. By the way, if it had been if Joe had been able to run at that point, he would have won.
I think he would have, and you know, if this Hillary would have won too. You know, if elections weren't tampered with, if Hillary right. went to Michigan, you can go on and on and on down the line, right?
Yeah.
But it is what it is. I don't see that same thing taking place in November, though. I think you put somebody solid there for the Democrats, and he has a vice president pick that bridges the gap to a large extent between the people who aren't really sure of him, but really like the VP, just taking everything from Obama's playbook, exactly the same thing, right? That's why he picked Joe. Turned out they were very compatible, but I promise you that wasn't the idea going into it whenever Obama picked him for his VP nomination, for his VP pick. He wanted somebody that could bridge the gap, and Joe was that person that did it.
Yep.
We had talked about the three states last night. There was supposed to be a fourth. It was supposed to be Ohio. However, Ohio's governor, Mike DeWine, at basically the 11th hour, decided that he was going to suspend the primaries in Ohio on account of the coronavirus, the COVID-19 virus, even after there was a court order stating that the primaries will still continue. This has lots of people concerned for lots of reasons. If you listen to Bob Kasich, or I'm sorry, it wasn't Bob Kasich. Who's the
Mike DeWine?
No, he's in the House now. Has that voice.
Oh,
Sherrod Brown. No,
yeah, Sherrod Brown.
If you listen to Sherrod Brown, they interviewed him last night. I was watching. I can't believe it. I was watching MSNBC, and they had interviewed him, and he said that he wasn't concerned about Mike DeWine, but what Mike DeWine did because of what he did, he was concerned, you know, in the short term. He had no concern about the short term. He had real concern about the long term, having a governor, having the authority to be able to stop not only an election, but DeWine's a Republican. To stop the Democrats, the opposite party's primary. And he's not really stopping it, he's just postponing it. But, I mean, there's nothing to stop him from postponing the election in his state until, you know, the day before the convention. Or postponing it even until after the convention, where his state's numbers, you know, their electorates aren't going to be able to factor into the total for the convention. Basically, anybody running can can influence an election that way, right? They don't get the required number of delegates, so you now have your opposing party now has a brokered convention. You know how well that goes. What do you think? Do you think he? You think he broke any laws, or do you see this becoming an issue?
Well, again, we've been talking about the possibility of, you know, the possibility of elections being postponed or shut down before COVID became an issue. We were, you know, I think on your other pod, Master Grant's talked about it. I would go back as far as almost 2 years ago, the first time I heard him say it on your other pod. And I think we've talked about it before, and it's an absolute concern. It's an absolute real concern because, you know, it's funny, you know, you've got people who wonder out loud about the politics of this, about the legality of it, which we are doing right now. And the question of whether or not, and we're being tested as a society, what is most important in terms of, you know, health versus exercising rights that we have as citizens. And, you know, it goes back to like I think, what, the Chicago fires, when they had to set fires to stop fires, you know, they had to burn down certain neighborhoods to keep fires from raging through the whole city. You know, it's the public good. You talk about, you know, taking drastic measures to save the bigger parts of the population. So, you know, I think we're entering very scary territory when officials postpone, delay elections. But under the circumstances, you know, I could understand it. I can understand the need. I can understand the thought process. You know, Mike DeWine didn't decide on his own, you know, to have the first few cases be tested positive in the state of Ohio before the primary was to take place. You know, that was an act of God, or whatever you want to believe in, nature, whatever. It was out of his control. So I got to say that under the circumstances at this moment, as we see this snapshot, I think that I can't question his decision-making process. I don't like that power is vested in one person. I don't like that it could be abused in the future. It may have been abused now, but the picture that I have in front of me as I'm trying to formulate my opinion is, I don't think it's an abuse. You know, I don't think it was the wrong decision. But it certainly does scare me. It certainly does unsettle me. It makes me worried.
I, you know what, Frank, I pretty much thought the same thing. I was like, well, this kind of sucks, but okay, I get it. I understand it. I understand why he did it. I do have a problem with him going against the courts, basically saying, no, you're going to have your election, because he proposed it and went to court. The court said, no, you're not. And then it seemed like he kind of sidestepped it. Right.
Yeah.
So that bothered me. And I'm more than willing, after hearing Sherrod Brown, to give him the benefit of the doubt and saying, look, he really had the public's best interest at heart. Okay. I'll give him that. I'm not going to question his motives. I don't know the guy from Adam. He could be sitting in a room with me right now. I wouldn't know who the hell he is. That being said, his actions sidestepping that were cause for concern. So that raised a bit of a red flag. And then the idea that any governor can just do this on whim.
Right.
That really, really, really bothers me. That has me more concerned than like if this is an isolated case, you know, and he convinces people that he did it for the public good, and fine, you know, we'll give you the pass. I'm not like I said, I'm not questioning his motives. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that his motives were true. They were honorable. But boy, that sets a hell of a precedent.
Sure does.
It really does. And if he was willing to do that, and he was willing to sidestep the court and do all of that, like I said, in the public good, he better be willing to now accept whatever consequences are a result of the DNC now suing them for what he did. Okay, that's the other side of your coin. You stuck your neck out for the benefit of the people. God bless you. Well done. But there's going to be a price for that now, because everything has a price. So you better be willing to accept that price. Hopefully he does. If he doesn't, and this thing starts to fight, he starts to fight these things, man, I'll tell you, Frank, that has me concerned. That has me really, really, really concerned.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in really strange times, because, you know, like, well, 2 or 3 days ago, there was one of these crazy Twitter people that, you know, is a, what do you want to call it? A right-wing Twitter blogger who, you know, posited out loud, gee, it seems like all these Democrat governors have gotten word from their party to shut all the businesses down and to make Trump look bad. Well, DeWine is a Republican, and he shut down schools and businesses in Ohio. So that certainly doesn't, you know, buy into, or it doesn't allow you to allow people to buy into this crazy bullcrap that somebody is putting out there, you know. But then on the other hand, governors from states in Florida, which is a Republican governor, and Arizona, and Illinois. And I'm not saying Illinois is a Republican governor. I just said Florida is a Republican governor. They allowed their folks to have elections, and Illinois has severe restrictions on restaurants and non-essential businesses, but they still had an election. So, you know, you really can't just look at this as a black and white thing. You can't look at this and say, gee, there's Democrats that are allowing it, Republicans that aren't, and vice versa. And that Democrats are shutting down businesses and Republicans aren't. No, that's going both ways. It's just not black and white. It's a judgment call. And some folks are exercising their judgment in different ways. And it really doesn't fall along. To me, it doesn't fall along party lines. You can't look at it as it's falling along party lines. So it's really just interesting to see how this is all going to play out.
Yeah. And I agree with you. Like I said, at this point, I'm willing to believe that it wasn't a political thing that he, you know, I at least don't even get that vibe. Right. It just, nothing about this feels like it was a political thing where he was trying to hijack something, or he was trying to make things hard on the Democrats. It really doesn't feel that way at all. I'm just worried about some knucklehead in another state who saw what he did and said, oh, hell, I can do this too. And for very political and very selfish reasons, you know, so
without a doubt.
So that, like I said, that's what has me concerned. It isn't what he did last night. If they want to delay the primary because of this health concern, for me personally, if you're gonna err, always err on the side of caution,
right?
You know, it's just it did perk my ears, and it does have me concerned to see how if and when somebody else does the same thing. Hopefully they don't. Hopefully that he actually stood up, did the right thing, is willing to accept whatever happens because of doing the right thing, and we're just all going to move on. I hope that's what happened. I will definitely have a lot more respect for him if that's how it plays out. What do you say we put this thing to bed?
Sounds like a good time to do it.
Yeah, it's good to end it on a somewhat high note. Anything you want to say before we stick a fork in it?
You know, unprecedented times, people, you know, pay attention. You know, I think just be present with the people that you love, be present in your situation that you have, if you're home, take the time to do things, pull out the old board games, pull out the, opportunities to connect with your family members. Try to make something good out of this tough situation we're living through. So that's what we're doing. And I just really hope that, you know, whether you meditate or pray or believe in a higher power or not, that maybe just take a few moments tonight around 9 p.m. and think about the situation that the world is in and maybe send some positive vibes. If you're a prayer and you pray to somebody, something, some entity, then pray to that entity that maybe that the world will change for the better, you know, in the very near future. And if you just meditate on positive thoughts, then meditate on that positive thought that the world can get better, that we can go through a healing, and that maybe things will change for the better for whatever reason. Because just like this came out of nowhere, things can change for the better very quickly too. So let's all do that. Let's all hope for that. Okay.
Yep. Absolutely. Great point, Frank. Just great point. Everybody, you know, pay attention to what the CDC is telling you, to what your local authorities are telling you. You know, just because it's not happening in your neighborhood or in your house or in your front yard doesn't mean it's not happening down the street. Doesn't mean it's not happening on the other side of town. You know, these folks are on the ball, and they have a lot more information than you do. So if they're telling you, you know, wash your hands, they're telling you, you know, the social distancing, if they're telling you this for a reason, folks, pay attention. Do what they tell you, okay? This is their job. This is what they're paid to do. So listen to them. Do what they advise, because it's not going to hurt you. It's going to be inconvenient. It's going to be a pain in the ass. But I'd rather have a pain in the ass than be on a ventilator someplace in the hospital. Okay?
Absolutely. So
with that being said, great pod as always, Frank. And to everybody listening, thank you for joining us. Your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. It truly does. So until next week, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't get that, you're far too young to be listening to us. I can tell you that. Frank, hopefully we have better news about this COVID-19 next week. Hopefully we're starting to see a breakthrough. Let's hope so anyhow. And until then, everybody be safe. Goodbye, good luck, and God bless.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Now what, I say, what's the big idea bashing me on the noggin with a rolling pin? Clunk enough, people, and we'll have a nation of lump heads.
Thanks for listening to Holy Sh** with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, holy sh**.